This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. We'll start with the documentary, When Claude Got Shot. It shows how one weekend of gun violence linked three strangers in Milwaukee. While visiting town for a high school reunion, Claude Motley was shot in the face during an attempted carjacking. Victoria Davison is a nurse with a concealed carry permit who shot a person trying to rob her two nights later. Nathan King is the assailant in both cases. He was 15 years old at the time. The film follows the 5 years of Claude's life after the shooting as he tries to recover both mentally and physically while also staying involved in the criminal justice journey of his shooter. The film explores the complicated issues of gun violence. It also humanizes each person's perspective and their struggles with what justice or punishment should look like. The film was directed by Brad Lichtenstein of 371 Productions here in Milwaukee. He and the film subject, Claude Motley, join me now to share more. Lichtenstein begins by explaining how his and Motley's relationship set the foundation for the documentary.
Well, Claude and I go back 18 years, actually, when I first moved to Milwaukee. I met Claude because our sons, my oldest son, his only son, attended UWM childcare together. And Claude and I met one night when they did like a parents' dinner thing, and we sat in those teeny little chairs together. So did our wives. I mean, we met the whole family and we just started talking and became friends. So we've been friends for all these years. And that's really why the trust and the ability to tell the story was able to materialize, because we already had that relationship in place.
Yeah. And if I, you know, and also, you know, the thing about it is, I don't think it could have happened if it wasn't in this type of situation. It was, I mean, a lot of things, you know, sometimes when things happen, you know, especially a person that was involved in it, you start to ask me questions, why? And one of those answers was because I had the opportunity to bring the story out, you know, and, you know, why did I survive? Why did it happen to me and things like that? So I took that as a sign, as in, hey, listen, let's go ahead and shine some light to the things that's happened in Milwaukee and for years and years and years. And you know, Brad gave me that vehicle and I had a lot of trust in him to put the story together, you know, to actually, you know, say that and express that. So I'm deeply indebted to that.
Brad, as you decided, yes, we're going to move through with this, and you also bring in two other narratives of the story. So can you share a little bit about how you were brainstorming, how you wanted to shape this story? Because on one hand, you're very close with one subject, but yet there's another fuller story to tell, but also be respectful of your friendship, of Claude's point of view. How did you grapple with how this could come together?
Well, you know, first of all, there's always this kind of like toggle between I'm Claude's friend, and I'm also a filmmaker working with Claude on a film. But I'd say pretty early on, I knew that I wanted to tell a kind of 360-degree story around gun violence. And so I wanted to include Nathan King, who was 15 when he shot Claude, and then 2 days later was shot himself when he and a similar crew of kids tried to rob Victoria Davison. She had a conceal and carry weapon and she shot Nathan. And the first time I talked to Victoria, I learned that this idea of a hero who uses a gun to defend herself is mostly a myth. And it's complicated because on the one hand, if she hadn't had a gun, she may very well have been killed herself. Maybe, maybe not, because the boys went and called for a gun once they realized she had a gun. So it's hard to know how that would have played out. But more importantly, she was devastated by having shot a 15-year-old boy. She, like Claude, like me, we all have kids. And, you know, immediately your mind goes to what it feels like to be a parent and potentially lose your child, which is also ultimately what happened to Nathan King's mother, who has a huge void in her life because her son went away to prison. So, you know, from the beginning, it felt like there was a way to really dig deep into gun violence with deeply personal stories and to help the audience see how many ripple effects there are from, in this case, you know, just a weekend of gun violence.
And as you guys mentioned, the narrative around shootings and the people who commit them, as well as those who are shot, are so brief. And Claude, throughout the film, you're always reaffirming that you are more than what happened to you. So as a Milwaukee native, obviously being aware of all the issues here, what did you feel was most important in sharing to show a bigger picture about gun violence with your story?
Well, and that was one of the main things that I wanted to talk about when we started this venture, is that it's so hard. There's so many things are stacked up against us, especially in Milwaukee with this segregated history and with the racism within this country. You know, you're always fighting. You're always trying to strive to be, try to get to something successful in what you have in your mind, what is successful. And that's what, you know, we were doing, me, my wife and everything. We're all from Milwaukee. All our family is here. And we were trying to, you know, just do things that can show, be an example to the community. And as we're back, you know, I get pulled back into this situation, which, you know, and the bad thing about it is that I grew up with that my whole life, you know, shootings, violence, drugs, I'm not trying to say that's all what Milwaukee is about. It's a beautiful place to be. I can't even express how much Milwaukee has made the person who I am, you know. And that includes all the empathy and the ability to go ahead and understand people's situations. So my whole goal was to say, you know, don't look at me as a victim. Look at me as a survivor. And I'm continuing to survive. You know, I survived my whole life through these things, through troubles and tribulations. And this is just another thing. But at one point in time, we need to help ourselves. We need to, you know, look and see, hey, listen, we can't allow the negative to overshine the positives. Let's pull together. Let's start to shine a light. Let's start, you know, putting this in, you know, 60-second clips and start showing the ripple effects of what shootings are actually in this community. You know, we talk about the homicide rate, but at least six times as many people get shot and are injured and maimed by shootings. That causes a ripple effect through families and through everywhere, the trauma that it causes. And we have to start addressing this as for what it is. You know, this is almost like terrorism within our community that we have to root out, that is not getting the attention on a national basis, you know, and it's more of blaming the victim for being in the situation that they're in. And it's just not, it's not right, you know, and I wanted to actually be able to say that to a large group of, you know, a large audience.
And on that note, you know, in news stories and brief summaries, we hear the victim survived, they're alive, and people kind of move on. But this film shows your 10 surgeries over 3 years, mounting medical bills, obviously the psychological trauma, and also the ripple effect on your family, your friends. And yet you were fighting, despite all this, to like keep that gas going, to stay positive, to try and keep moving forward, move beyond it. You know, but how difficult is that? And how are you now compared to when you're in the heat of shooting and you're trying to keep moving forward, to not think too hard about that situation, just for your own sanity, so to speak?
Well, I don't want to diminish it. You know, PTSD is real, and it can definitely affect who you are as a person and your ability to actually get things together. For a while, I was spinning my wheels in the same place because it was hard to, you know, pick up the pieces and start moving forward. And then you have another surgery and you're back, you know, for a month and a half trying to recover. And it definitely was a very hardship, you know, a hardship on my life and my whole family's life. You know, I'm not going to diminish that. But because of the things that happened in Milwaukee and how I grew up, I was kind of prepared for this. I feel that everyone, all my family members, everyone that lives in Milwaukee has a level of PTSD that they've gone through just because of the shock of segregation, the shock of being oppressed the way they are and things like that. And they all are, you know, have to continue to strive and not really worry about the things that's holding them back, but continue to try to push forward. And that's what prepared me. That's why I said Milwaukee made me who I was. And I would not be able to do that if I didn't have that training and that thought process to always stay positive, regardless of the things that, you know, are trying to be thrown in front of you.
Something you said before Nathan's sentencing hearing that really stood out to me is, you know, are we trying to do this as a deterrence or are we trying to get justice? Can you both kind of talk about that dynamic of telling the story?
One of the things that really frustrates me, and I said already that, you know, it was a real push to make Nathan as the perpetrator and the enemy. And you know, once we solved his situation, we solved the problem. And I rejected that immediately. Because when I look at this situation, you know, I have had people involved in the criminal justice system that are dear to me and have also come out of it a different person, have served their time and just wanted to become a productive citizen in this society. But a lot of times they don't get the chances. And it all starts with the attitudes toward them when they're going in. So when I looked at this whole situation, I wanted to make sure that people understood that when we're sending someone to jail, especially a person that, you know, I'm sitting here saying I want leniency for him. When we send these people to jail, we have to, there's a fine line between punishment and revenge. And I really felt that a person that young, even though I wanted him to be in the adult courts and to have that punishment, but I didn't want to, I'm not trying to throw away the key on a person. I know that he can come back and we can as a community and just as me and him, we can overcome what happened and move forward.
I'd just like to add, I think what makes the documentary special is the deep humanity of Claude. And you get to go on this journey with him as he starts to unravel what it is that he wants out of this situation for himself and for the people involved. And one of the impacts that has is it contrasts with how rigid the system is. And when we're in the part of the film that's really weaving through the criminal justice system and it culminates in the scene you just pointed out, Audrey, with the sentencing, you know, the judge doesn't listen to Claude. And up to this point, the assistant DA and the police have been saying how important it is to have the quote unquote victim's voice be part of this entire process. But when it came right down to it and the moment of truth occurred and Claude is asking that profound question of what are we really after here? The judge ignores him. He even says, you know, he has different concerns maybe than Kim and Claude do. And I think that's one of the deep tragedies in the film, beyond the bullets, is that the system is so entrenched that there's a level of indifference that it has. And that's oppressive. That's systemic and historical racism, if you will, and not in the sense that it's necessarily targeting anyone in particular, but it is unable to respond to the facts on the ground. And the facts on the ground are that we have three people, all of whom are trying to wrestle with these difficult questions of how to respond to each other and treat each other and have relationships in the midst of all this. And that turns out to be way more human than the system that it's all taking place in.
Well, and as you mentioned, the driving force is you guys outside of the justice system, even after the sentencing hearing, you know, progresses and Nathan is sentenced to jail time. But having worked on this for over 5 years and also deciding to do your own actions that will let the audience members see, you know, what do you both hope this film can do beyond raising awareness?
Well, one of the things that I think that we need to do, and Brad discussed this, you know, really well, is to try to tap into our empathy and our humanity. You know, one of the things that it seems like there's a formulaic thought process of how we need to go about doing and dealing with justice and kids and people in need, you know, and it's just like we just give that away to someone else to take care of, and we relent our responsibility in the process. So I really wanted people to understand that they can make their own choices in these situations and they can have a voice in those situations. They can go ahead and start to understanding that in their community, in their block, in their, you know, in their own home, that they can go ahead and start making decisions that are not based on anger and frustration and fear and things like that, but they can also say, let me put myself in the shoes of other people.
Just to piggyback on what Claude said, I mean, I think films are great at inviting conversations that people might not otherwise have. And there are different fault lines, I think, in this film, certainly around the experience of being Black versus white in cities when it comes to violence and community violence in particular. But beyond having discussions, I think what's really important is to pair any film with an impact campaign. So we're working with a group called The League, which has experience on Stacey Abrams' campaign to register voters across Georgia, very effective group of people. And our goal really is to use the film to open up that conversation, but then to push towards action, which means really support of violence prevention strategies that we know work. And what do I mean? I mean, when people talk about defunding the police, it's not just defund the police. It's really about where do we put our resources? Just the way that when we look at gun violence, we have to look at it as a public health issue. We have to understand what are the root causes? What are the factors upstream that are creating the circumstances that end with someone pulling the trigger on a gun? And so to that extent, the violence prevention that works is interruption, which in Milwaukee is 414 Life. It also is making sure that young people have loving, caring adults in their lives. And if that is not always necessarily from home, it can also be through youth organizations like Urban Underground, like Running Rebels, like Boys and Girls Clubs, and making sure that we're strengthening those programs. And that we're also just creating the same opportunities to get involved in whatever activities, whether it's science and STEM or sports, that everybody should have a whole menu of options when they're young, not just the privilege. And those are the kinds of things that create young men who are going to pursue other things, not picking up guns.
Claude Motley is the subject of the new documentary, When Claude Got Shot. And Brad Lichtenstein is its director and the president of 371 Productions here in Milwaukee. You can watch the film through the virtual Milwaukee Film Festival, which starts today. You'll find a link on how to watch it, as well as our extended conversation with Brad and Claude, at wuwm.com.